This is Stateside. I'm April Bear. Comedian Joe Pera is not from Marquette, but the version of himself he plays in a series of short films is easily recognizable to anyone who lives in or has family in a small town in the UP.
You know, Joe, if you're still having trouble finding the perfect tree, why not get an artificial tree?
I don't like fake trees. They take business away from farmers here in Michigan. I would like to say a few other things on the subject, but can't, because this is a family show.
The series Joe Pera Talks With You has become a runaway hit on Cartoon Network's Adult Swim nighttime block. His oddball observations on subjects like beans and grocery stores are weirdly hilarious. But perhaps what really makes the show is that Joe Pera is not just being funny.
Have you decided what type of tree you'll choose yet? It's an important decision. Cutting down a tree is taking a life. Besides, if you cut down the first tree you see, you won't have the opportunity to wander around and cut your own tree farm with your family.
Is this Michigan-informed series the Mr. Rogers-level guidance that we all need right now? We needed to talk to this guy to find out. Joe Pera is actually from Buffalo, New York. When he's not shooting the series in Marquette and locations in Wisconsin, he lives in New York City. Joe Pera, welcome to Stateside.
Thanks for having me.
Had you ever been to Marquette before?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What was your purpose for traveling our way?
Well, I guess we started with a show about how to pick out the perfect Christmas tree in 2016. And we had to shoot it in October so that it could air by Christmas time. We're looking for a place in a Christmas tree producing area that was likely to get snow in October, and that kind of led to Marquette.
What was it about the place that seemed like a venue that you wanted to play with a little bit?
Well, I mean, as soon as we shot the Christmas special in Newberry nearby, and just through research and visiting a number of times, I became interested in the area. It seemed a lot like where I grew up in Buffalo with a former kind of industrialized place. It's a little bit smaller, so it made it more compact for the story, but it's got an interesting history. You know, people love hockey and beer in both places, and it's cold, although Marquette is much colder and outdoes Buffalo on snow by a lot. But there are a lot of similarities in the personalities, and it also kind of reflected a lot of the themes of the stories and the characters that we wanted to tell. So it just seemed like the perfect place, and also just the setup and the nature surrounding it provided a nice environment to set the show, and one that, I was very inspired when I visited, and and also I guess when you make it a show or a movie, you can write things that you want to do, and so I figured I'd like to keep going back to Marquette and have an excuse to do that, so the show was kind of a part of the decision, too.
That's perfect platform.
Mm-hmm.
The version of Joe Pera who we see in the show is something that you worked on through stand-up, right?
Mm-hmm.
I wondered how people reacted to Joe Pera when you were first exploring this character a little bit. I mean, I'm trying to imagine somebody catcalling or heckling. I feel very protective of you, and I would really want to get up in someone's face if they were giving you a hard time.
Oh, I'll appreciate that. I'll tell them that if anybody heckles me going forward, that there's someone in Michigan who's ready to fight. She works at NPR, and I'm sure that they'll back down immediately.
But seriously, I mean, what were people's reactions like when you first started getting up on stage?
It was different. I think I'm not like the fastest comedian, or wit or anything. So I just kind of played to my strengths. I took my time up there, and I think that it's often a contrast to the other people on the shows I'm performing on. So when it's, you know, somebody takes their time and people tune in, and I guess sometimes takes a minute for people to, you know, enjoy the new pace. Sometimes they do. sometimes they definitely don't. But, I mean, at the core of it is just writing good jokes. So, you know, you can set whatever pace you want on stage, but if the jokes and the material isn't there, it doesn't matter. So they tune in, and also, but once they were tuned in, I'd be able to, you know, tell what I think are good jokes. And it's tough sometimes in a louder environment. And I don't know, one of my worst performances, I was offered $100 to perform in a casino outside of Buffalo, and there's nobody really watching. And then on top of that, you had all the noise from the casino machines, and it was kind of a disaster. So it's hard to compete with the environment like that.
Almost everybody I know who's connected with you through Adult Swim makes the comment, this is a really different kind of show for Adult Swim. Mm-hmm. How did they approach you about how this might fit in?
I had an animation that I made for them called Joe Parrot Talks You to Sleep, in which I tried to talk the audience to sleep. And it was based on some stand-up that I was doing, because my one friend commented that my material may inadvertently have a calming effect. So I kind of played into that, and I pitched it to them. They gave us a very small budget to make it on our own. And so we did. People seemed to like it. And I think that, like, being able to put that on air and just make the thing, because it's kind of hard to describe. It doesn't quite make sense. But I think it works the same way that on Adult Swim, the same way that, you know, if there's a loud comedian in front of me, if I'm, you know, coming on after an episode of, I don't know, a Family Guy, but it's a...
Rick and Morty or something.
Sure. It's a nice contrast, and I think it helps both shows because it enhances the tone of both programs. So I think it really works maybe even better on Adult Swim than it would anywhere else.
You work with a team of writers now.
Uh-huh.
Was it scary to open up to other people?
Yes. It's hard to communicate the tone, and, you know, it's also a very personal show in a way. Everything on the show I believe in, and it's about, especially the past season, was about personal stuff that happened to me. And so luckily I had everybody who writes on it is a close friend, and now that we have, like, the season two was much easier to write that now that the template was laid out. I think we all, except for Katie, who's from Arizona, comes from the Midwest and kind of has an understanding of the culture and tone, and our backgrounds kind of align. So it makes it easy in that way.
So much of the charm of the series is what you're talking about with the pacing. There are times when I've been watching it and I thought you were just frozen or had completely derailed. But I realized that you're just thinking things through. Are there ever times when you have to sort of push yourself to slow it down, to just hit the right pace?
Definitely. I think, like, with my stand-up or even working in the writer's room, they'll get frustrated because I just need time to think. But, it's really interesting doing it as a part of a TV production, because everything moves so fast and there's so many people involved and pressure to make time that, it comes time to shoot, I kind of just need to relax, maybe take a walk around the block and remember that the show can't go at TV pace. I understand, you know, why people speed it up or whatever, but I think my stand-up kind of goes at walking pace just because that's what I do before I go on stage or on camera.
Yeah. In the show, you're a choir teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Did you do choir growing up?
Yep.
What was your favorite song to sing?
I don't know. I remember in, like, middle school, high school, like, all those Moses Hogan compositions were fun because they were, you know, spirited and loud and catchy. I remember enjoying that. You know, it was always a treat when the teacher would let you sing a popular song as opposed to traditional choral music. That was always good.
Yeah, they pull out the Beatles and everybody kind of loses their mind.
There's a really wonderful video of this middle school choir singing Blackbird. It's funny in, like, a really nice way, but they get through the whole song, and then this one kid stiffly you know, walks through the rest of the choir, comes up to the stage and sings, "You were only waiting for this moment to arrive." That's it. And then he like turns and walks back, and I think it's the funniest thing. And he couldn't have been more serious about it for the, I don't know.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Joe Pera. He's the star and creator of Joe Pera Talks With You, a series that's seen on Cartoon Network's Adult Swim.
There are a number of vegetables you can grow on an arch, but I chose beans because good flavor. Can you describe the flavor of beans? Me either, but I know it's much better than eating plain rice. They're simple to grow, and you can eat them now, or you can can them and eat them years from now.
There's so many episodes where you're just kind of talking about beans and iron and breakfast and stuff. And then there's this one episode where you're talking to us about writing.
Mm-hmm.
And you're trying to write your Nana's obituary.
Right.
And right out of the gate, it's heartbreaking. And she was in the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she played herself in the Christmas episode. And she passed during the process of season one. She wasn't able to. We had to go to Buffalo to shoot part of the Christmas special because, you know, we could shoot in her kitchen, and that was the only option because she wasn't going to come to shoot it elsewhere. But I thought she was one of the funniest people that I knew. And yeah, she was my last remaining grandparent. I got to spend a lot of time with her growing up. So I don't know. It's maybe the trying to write that obituary is just analogous to how difficult it was to, you know, explain to somebody else how, you know, somebody special can be to you. But on paper, it's hard to explain what was so wonderful about her. And yeah, just the effort to put that on paper and make other people understand. Yeah, and that difficulty, that's kind of what the episode is about. And also, how do you sum up somebody's life in three sentences?
Anyone who saw the Christmas episode, I think, really is kind of there with you.
Yeah, she kind of always popped off the screen in the videos that she was nice enough to do. It was very funny. We would, like, feed her lines, and, you know, she wouldn't want to memorize. We'd just feed her the lines, and then she'd recite them back.
Joe, are you bringing a girl for Christmas dinner this year?
You know I don't have a girlfriend, Anna.
I know, but I thought you'd bring one anyway.
No. I don't think so.
Well, anyway, did you get yourself a Christmas tree yet?
I looked this morning, but none of them felt right. I like yours, though. How'd you choose the Scotch pine?
They don't shed their needles, and I don't have to bend down to pick up the bristles.
How come you don't like to pick up the bristles?
Because I'm old.
And it was very funny. I think during the Christmas episode, she was like, she doesn't understand why you do the line more than once. So after a few times, she got tired of it, and she, like, pretended to be, like, losing energy. But then as soon as the crew left her kitchen, me and Marty were still there, and she stood up and was like, "Okay, what do you guys want for lunch?" And she had kind of, like, faked out the fake tired to get rid of everybody.
Why was it important to you to show some sides that are serious and even painful in the series?
Honestly, a number of the writers had lost somebody during the first season, and Connor O'Malley, who is, I guess people wouldn't expect by watching his videos or knowing who he is, to suggest it, but he actually pushed to try and approach that storyline. But I don't know. I think that to not touch on loss, darkness, other things, the show wouldn't be true to life, then it would make for a tacky television show.
Well, in addition to the funny stuff and the moments of human suffering, one of the things I really value about the show is moments of awe or wonder. I think my favorite, and I think a lot of people's favorite, is the episode called Church Announcements, mm-hmm. where Joe is doing where you are doing the church announcements. And you just sort of stop as an aside to explain about your new favorite song. You've heard The Who's Baba O'Reilly on the radio. And we see you in that moment when you heard this song, just transfixed. Mm-hmm. And then breaking out into spontaneous freestyle dancing around the house. It's kind of very you and very not you at the same time. How did you settle on Baba O'Reilly as the right song for that?
There's no other song that does it. We had that idea and then we showed it to the network and they're like, you got to think of alternatives. This is going to cost a fortune in music rights. But I don't know. There's no alternative song that was equally, funny and a great song that kind of holds up the time that somebody probably should have heard before. And it's, so ubiquitous. But I think everybody could relate about a song like that. And it was great.
Everybody who we meet in the show seems so perfectly cast.
Yeah.
And I wondered that when you're on location in Wisconsin or in the Upper Peninsula, is everybody that we see just like a person that you guys go out and recruit, or are some of them cast and brought in?
It depends. I think that's one of the most fun parts of the process is including people that you think are funny in terms of the people in the cast, like Joe Scott, who plays Sue Melski. A lot of friends are in the show that I've just worked with and found funny in New York. But also, when we're on location, we had an episode where we needed a wedding DJ. And we were doing karaoke one night. There's a post-Fish Fry karaoke night. And the DJ, DJ Brian, was a real interesting character, the way that he was singing and running the karaoke night. So we asked him if he would be interested in doing it. This season, we were looking for the perfect beauty parlor, and we finally found one, and the owner, Yvonne, was such an interesting person, too, that we ended up casting her as one of my grandmother's friends on the show, Carol. And, actors can be interesting, but this is a person who's run a beauty shop her entire life. She talks to the customers for and knows their secrets and has a gift of conversation, and you can just feel that when she's on screen and doing the role. And it's also exciting when you cast non-actors. They bring like an excitement to it because it's a new process to them, and it's fun to just let people be themselves. I think that that's one of the best ways to create an interesting show. It's great.
Joe Parra, I just want to thank you so much both for talking to us and for the show. It feels like everything we needed last year and this year.
I truly appreciate that. Yeah, hopefully we'll get to make more and be back in Michigan soon.
Okay. You take care of yourself, okay?
Yeah, you too. Thanks for promising to fight on my behalf.
You know where to find me.
I'll hold
anytime.
You to that.
Joe Parra. You can see episodes of Joe Parra Talks With You online right now, or if you watch Cartoon Network during the Adult Swim block. Support for arts and culture coverage comes in part from the Michigan Council for Arts and Cultural Affairs.